This is Just Women, every Tuesday at 1 o'clock on Brooklyn's Radio.
I'm pleased to welcome into the studio Nikki Faulkner from Mulberry Bush Consulting. Welcome, Nikki.
Thank you.
Now, we're talking today about something you obviously have a great passion for, and that's getting teams to work well, make their businesses more successful. And your company, Mulberry Bush Consulting, can help them do just that. So how did you actually gain the experience you needed to advise people on the best way to work in a team?
So I've obviously been part of a team at different points in my life, but most of the experience I've had that I share through my business is actually through being a manager of teams. So I've managed teams probably since about 2000, so plenty of experience to draw on. I was lucky enough to do it in a very large corporation, so if I made a little mistake, it didn't tend to make a huge difference to the business as a whole. And obviously small business owners don't have that luxury, so what I'm able to do now is take all the things I've learnt over the many years that I've been managing people, so that people don't make the mistakes that they might otherwise make that might actually have a much bigger impact on their business.
What sort of mistakes are you talking about? 'Cause I know you said somewhere that you had to consult HR when you were in a large business. What would that be about?
So basically, one of the main things that people don't get right first off is actually employing the right people in the first place. So making sure you've got people that fit. And if you're a small business, it's even more important than if you're in a very large business where someone who doesn't fit can kind of be sort of covered up a little bit, if you know what I mean. But basically, when you're in a small business, if you've got sort of anywhere from even sort of 3 to 10 employees, if you change one of those people around, it can make a big difference to how that whole team interacts together.
So you wouldn't actually say to a manager, you need to get rid of this person on the team. It's just a matter of getting the best out of them, really.
So if they've got somebody that doesn't fit very well currently, then we work on ways that we can make sure through performance management that we are trying to give them as much support as possible to work as well. And if that really doesn't work, then obviously getting rid of them is an option once you've gone down all the paths that you need to go down. But what I try to do is help them figure out how they would hire next time, so that the people they start as they continue to build their teams are the right people for the company.
Surely one of the problems is that people do change, so they might hire the right person to begin with, but then that person might have a life-changing stressful situation or something, and then they change.
Yep, and not only that, even if they haven't changed, if the job situation's changed, so maybe they've got a bit bored and there isn't room for development, then you change as how your attitude changes and how you interact on a day-to-day basis might change. So a lot of that is around having very good performance management in place, so that you're constantly having feedback and communication and conversations, so that you get the inkling if something isn't quite right, so you can have those conversations to make sure you understand, and then you can work out between you what the best step is to go forwards.
So would you do coaching one-to-one with this person who's not fitting in?
So I don't work with the employees directly. Obviously, when I was a manager, I would obviously have those conversations with the employees directly. Right now, what I do is I work with the business owner to help them learn to have the conversations that they need to have with their employees. Obviously, it's not helpful for me in the long term if I'm dealing with their employees directly. It's better if they can learn to deal with different situations themselves, so that whatever comes up, they're equipped to deal with it, because you never know what's coming up when people are involved.
Sure. And so what do you find are the most common problems, apart from not hiring the right people to begin with?
Another major area that we spend time on is, for one thing, it's people not setting clear goals and expectations and then wondering why things aren't going quite the way they expected. The other one is people avoiding having those difficult conversations. So I might say to somebody, have you ever had a difficult conversation? Let's talk about that. And they'll say, oh, no, my team's great. We work really well. And I say, but actually, we were talking last week about that guy that wasn't working quite fast enough. It was starting to impact your bottom line. Oh, yes, but I don't want to upset him. So anytime it's something you're trying to avoid where you think you might be upsetting someone, that by its nature is a difficult conversation. And a lot of people will do anything possible to avoid those conversations where you feel someone's going to be uncomfortable or get emotional or upset. So we do a lot of conversations and work around how to deal with those, and obviously they're all different, but it's about what sort of techniques and strategies you can use to make it easier so that you get better at them and so that everybody comes out of it whole.
I used to work for a company where they actually said feedback is a gift. So if you actually gave feedback, it had to be constructive rather than just saying, gosh, you were rubbish at that or whatever.
And specific, I would say, not even just constructive, but even saying to somebody, you did a great job, that's nice to hear, but it actually doesn't help you know exactly what it was you think I did well, so that next time I can do the same thing again. So if I thought the main thing that I did was one thing and you were thinking something else, then we haven't really kind of moved things forward.
No, definitely, I agree. But it must be very difficult when people have such different personalities working in a team because they do things in a different way. Is there one quality that you think that every team really needs to be successful?
I think people need to be willing to listen to each other, which is, I guess, a quality that it's not just a team. I think that's people in general need to be able to listen to each other and truly listen, not just hear words and then be ready with a reply that you'd got prepared an hour earlier, but actually listen to what people were saying, and also engage with how they're saying it so that you can actually try and have proper conversations. Because I think that is something that everybody's getting busier and busier, and it's very easy to not have proper conversations. And having a team, it's just like any other relationship. It's about making sure the communication's there and everybody knows where they stand and what you expect from them, and then the conversations you need to have if you're not getting what you expect from them.
So do you ever do sort of tests with people to find out what sort of personalities and things they were?
So I personally don't, but I work with a variety of people that can offer, obviously there's a multitude of tests out there. Depending on the size of the business, we might look at different options. Typically, I will look at ones that just allow the whole team to understand what their preferred communication preferences are, because that's kind of, for me, the starting point. If you can understand that, then you can dig deeper later, but that's really where I would usually start.
I think that's very useful, because some people, they talk immediately, don't they, if someone asks a question, and other people, they like to ponder and think, yes, I'm not going to say anything. And the person who answers immediately says, well, they never come back with anything. And it's just understanding that people have different ways of doing it.
Yes, yeah,
and nothing is really right or wrong, but it's just understanding how different members of your team perform.
And that's true across not just the conversations, but just how people like to work. Some people like to work quietly. Some people like all the buzz around them. And again, you can't necessarily, especially as a small business, give everybody what they want. But if you understand what they prefer, you can at least make allowances, and you can kind of give them options where that's possible to make things as comfortable as possible.
And I believe you've just published a book.
I have, very excited. I got the proofs through this morning, called Accelerate to Team Success. And really, it's a quick start guide for those small business owners to really get them going with team management if they've not got a lot of experience.
Yeah, congratulations. Thank you. What's the format of the book then? What do you cover?
So essentially we cover, it's actually set out in order as if you were starting from zero, but it's actually designed and written in such a way that if you've got a particular issue, you could dive in at any point and you should just be able to get the information you need. So we cover everything through recruitment, performance management, and then bigger things like how you might do your workforce planning and your strategies around what sort of people you might need in your business. So really it's the whole gamut of everything you would need if you were going to bring people on board.
And you've self-published?
Self-published on Amazon, yes. So
that well, that's terrific. And was that too difficult?
No, not too difficult once I got going. It's like any of these things. Initially you start and you think, oh, this is quite onerous, but actually once you figure out how they're taking you through in steps, it's actually quite a straightforward process.
And how long did it take you to write the book?
Probably been working on it on and off for a couple of years. I write a lot of articles, so they were sort of the inspiration for it. So a lot of the material was kind of half there, and it all just had to be sort of brought together and rewritten, if you like. So a couple of years of sort of mulling on it.
That's fantastic. And of course, people just go onto Amazon to buy a copy.
They can. It's on Kindle and it's in paperback as well.
So. Brilliant. That's really good. So looking at your website, I see you've got what's known as the 7-step program. Can you talk us through that?
Yep. So the 7-step program, essentially, step one is where I would work initially with somebody and do a deep dive into their business to really understand what's going on at the moment, where their challenges are, what they think they're good at, what they're not so good at, and just really understand where the business is in total regards to just people management. Then steps 2 to 6 are a part of a 6-month program where we would look at gathering feedback about the business owner and how they manage. We'll put in an exit interview process. We'll do an employee engagement piece with the business. I won't call it a survey. Depends if you've only got a few employees, it tends to be more of a conversation than a survey. And then we take people through training, implementation, and actually getting processes rolled out. And step 7 is basically ongoing mentoring after that. So if you've got all the pieces in place, but your business is still growing, you might need to tweak those as you go.
So when you work with clients, is it generally on a sort of 6-month kind of program, or
Initially it'll be 6 months in that program to start with. And then some people, if their business isn't growing super fast, that will keep them going for a couple of years. They've got all the things they need in place and they've understood what they can do. They can tweak it themselves a little bit. If they're growing quite fast, then that ongoing step 7 allows us to kind of keep all the things that we've put in place current with as their business grows.
Do you tend to work with small businesses more than larger ones these days?
Yes. So I'm trying to focus my energies on the small businesses. So I'm looking at businesses probably anywhere from sort of 2 to 20 employees. I've also been doing quite a lot of work recently with people that don't have any employees, but I'll have a team through freelancers and virtual people, assistants, HR, that kind of thing, because I think there's a lot of things around managing a team that are still valid, even though you have to be very careful what language you use when referring to people that aren't your employees. But basically the overall feeling about how you communicate is still true for everybody. And if you want to work with the right people and make sure things are working effectively, then a lot of it really is about having some process and then the communication.
Do you find that there's some teams who have a manager who's never had any sort of management experience?
Yes.
Why would somebody be appointed to do a job like that, which is really important, when they've got no experience? I don't understand.
Yeah, well, certainly in the corporate world, that's very common, because being promoted to being a manager is considered a step up the ladder. But typically you're promoted, it's a great thing, you've got this promotion, but you don't necessarily get a lot of support. The companies will probably say they have lots of training for you, but the reality is you either may not have access to that training, or you may not have thought it was important enough to do it, and so all of a sudden you are the gatekeeper to the next sort of round of people in that business, and yet you might have no real idea what you're doing. So I've worked with many people like that in the past.
And is it also true that, I mean, you might have the training and everything, but if you're not that type of person that's good at managing people, whatever training they tell you might not actually help you very much?
Yeah, and I mean, there are definitely people that are less cut out to manage other people. Yes. And I certainly know a company that I worked for, when you looked at the progression, they assumed that everybody ultimately would become a manager, and they really didn't have a place for those really, really good technical people to keep going up in the business but staying technical. So it's almost that people assume that that is where you end up, you'll end up managing something. And unfortunately, there are people for whom that's just not appropriate, and and they're not comfortable doing it, and they're not very good at it either. So
so I think unless you engage with the people on your team, they don't sort of go that extra mile for you, do they? I remember working for a company, and my manager just sort of looked what time I'd arrived and things. If I was even 5 minutes late, he sort of had a go at me, and I thought, that is not helping, because if he needed me to work later, I wouldn't, because I think, well, I've done my hours.
Yeah, and again,
and
I think
they don't seem to realise that.
That's a lot about having normal human conversations with people to understand what makes you tick, and to really understand, like you say, if you might be a few minutes late in the morning, but you might work several hours later in the afternoon, and if you're not taking all of that into consideration, then people do start, once they realise that they're not, it's not a two-way street, then people start shutting down, and then it becomes much more difficult to manage.
Yeah, it does really, doesn't it?
Yeah. I was very interested to see on your website that you also do road cycling. When did that start?
Well, I would have started... I spent some time living in the States, and when I moved back in 2000, I would have bought a bike there and then. My husband wasn't so keen, didn't quite fancy the Surrey roads. So it took until the Olympics to come through and sort of cycling to take off in this area before we were allowed to have bikes. So we've been going since about January 2014. But now it's pretty much what we do to sort of de-stress from everything else that we do.
And on average, how many miles do you cycle?
So this year so far, I think I'm up about 2,500 kilometres that I've done so far this year. Lucky enough that we can cycle indoors. So in the winter, I am a fair weather cyclist. So obviously with a beautiful day like today, I'm quite happy to go out cycling. Middle of winter, not so much. But we're really lucky. We're set up so that we can cycle throughout the winter indoors in the house. In the house, yeah. There's a fantastic piece of software out there these days, which is like your Facebook for cycling, and you can be on your turbo trainer with people all around the world on their turbo trainers. It gets
very competitive
races. Yes. They've actually, some of the pro teams have actually selected some of their newer members through academies that they've run on this online platform. Come up in the last couple of years, so it's amazing what you can do these days with technology.
But I was also interested to see that you use your cycling as an example of how you can make goals work. Would you like to elaborate on that?
Yeah, so when I'm giving workshops or talks about setting goals, which is very important for me with people around performance management, my examples for me, I've got goals for my business, I've got goals for myself in the business, and I've got my cycling goals. And I just find it's more appropriate to pick a topic that's not related to my business and tell everybody everything about how my business is going. So I use the cycling as an example of being able to explain to people how it works and how you can make it work. I mean, I enjoy the cycling, but there are days where if I didn't have goals set, I would not get on the bike. When the weather's beautiful, it's easy to say I'm going to go out there and enjoy it. When the weather's not so beautiful, even with the indoor option, if it's hard work, we do have a tendency to not always want to do it. So by having goals set for things like the total number of kilometres I want to do in the year, which I think is about 7,000, so we're on target for that.
My goodness gracious, that's a lot.
Yeah, and having various events set out, say, you know, I'm going to do these events between April and September, it all helps sort of make sure you actually do it. And that's true with the business side of things as well. If you've got a goal set, people are much more likely to do the things they've been asked to do than if you just sort of ask and then go away and assume everybody's remembered and realised it was important as you thought it was.
And I would think that cycling would be a good team building exercise too, perhaps.
It sort of depends. I'm heavy-ish and I go up hills very slowly, so I don't do well in a team environment for the cycling, because I actually go quite fast on the flat where I've got momentum behind me, and I'm quite strong, but I just have weight against me when I go up a hill. So I actually find I do an awful lot of cycling, even when it's an event where there are thousands of people in it. I cycle on my own most of the time, because on the hills the people that are faster than me go up past me, and on the flats, you know, they're not going. It's just easier for me to cycle on my own. But generally I would say cycling is quite a group activity, but I just happen to not be the weight ratio to make it work.
Oh, well, never mind. So,
but it's fun.
So talking more about goals, what are the goals for your business? I'm assuming that it's you, just you in the business at the moment.
Yes, so it's me, but obviously I have people that help me, again, on a freelance basis where I need them. So it is just me at the moment. I have no employees, which is a little bit strange for somebody that helps people with their employees, but that's just where we are at the moment. And basically my goal at the moment is just to get more people through the program, and then ultimately I'd really like to be able to license that program for other people to offer in other parts of the country and worldwide. So it's very well structured. It'd be very easy for somebody else to get involved and be able to deliver the same content. So that's my ultimate goal. Generally it's just like most small businesses, it's to get my customers in, bring in the revenue and enjoy myself while I'm doing it, because I'm really very passionate about the topic.
So I know you also worked all over the world, didn't you, doing this sort of stuff?
Well, so funnily, I've only worked in the UK, but my teams have been based all over the world.
Okay.
So I've had a lot of experience of managing people remotely. So for a long time, I managed a team that was based over Europe, Africa, Middle East, Eurasia. So I have people all over the place. So yes, I have people all the way from Ivory Coast, Norway, out in Azerbaijan, all sorts of places.
And did they have sort of different ideas of how to make a business successful? Was it harder to work with them in some ways?
Well, a lot of the people that I work with, they were those sorts of people that had been promoted into management positions. They were very good at what they did technically, and here they were, often not only promoted into a management position, but in a country that was not theirs. So for example, I was working with an Egyptian guy, fantastic technically, and he'd been sent to Ivory Coast to basically build the business from scratch. So the operational side, fantastic, because he knew exactly what he was doing backwards, forwards and sideways. But in terms of understanding who he needed to hire, whether he needed to hire anyone, whether he could just use consultants, all of that sort of thing, that was all very new. And that's where I was able to work. And working remotely with people like that is easy, because you can dip in and out. So they can be running their business like I do with the small business owners now, and I can sort of pop in and have a conversation once a week, every couple of weeks, and we can work on something over time. But I don't need to be physically sat with him to do that, because obviously he's day to day, he's still got to run his business and think about all the other things that I don't need to worry about. So it's very interesting.
Do you find if there's somebody who's from a foreign country with quite a strong accent, it's quite difficult to understand them, and that can be a problem which can't be solved in a way?
I've personally usually found that you can kind of tune yourself into people's accents, especially if it's people you work with over time. So when you first start working with them, you can think, oh, this is going to be really difficult, but actually over time, as you work with them, you do start to tune in, and then it does become a lot easier. If you do have a lot of problems like that, then we would also be able to do a lot more. These days we can do screen sharing, so we can do the video conferencing, so you can actually see somebody, which makes it easier to kind of interpret what they're saying. And obviously email comes in a lot anyway. A lot of these things are done partially by email and partially by talking, so the email part makes things simpler on that side as well.
So what tools and processes would you like to offer a business?
So really what I like to offer is the structure that allows a business owner to be able to consistently manage their teams really well. And I would do that through physically helping them build the tools that they need to manage, but also helping them arm themselves with the soft skills they need to do that really well. And I do that through using a lot of technology where I can, just to make it, again, easy for a business owner to continue running their business on a day-to-day basis while we dip in and out and sort of do that mentoring process almost on the side, if you like, so that we're not taking time out of the business. We're giving them that opportunity to learn as they're running their business.
And how important is technology to learn these days?
I think it is important. At the end of the day, it's the relationship between the person who's teaching, coaching, mentoring, whatever they're doing, whatever level you're working at, is probably the most important thing. But having technology does allow you to be much more flexible in how you make that work. Now, there are people that, again, have preferences. So some people always prefer to do things face-to-face in person. There are other people who are actually very tech-savvy, and they're actually almost more happy to do it remotely because they can do things as and when they want. But it's being aware of what technology is available to you and using it appropriately with the right people is key, I think, these days for education in all areas.
Because if someone's been in a business a long time and they've had no sort of technology training, that could be quite difficult, because you'd still like to be quite high up in the team because you've been there a long time. But if you can't do, you know, Facebook or whatever,
yeah.
I mean, it's very difficult because it's so much part of a business these days, isn't it?
And I would say, again, a lot of that is around using your team to the best of its combined abilities. So again, if you've got somebody in the team that's very good at something, it's helping getting them to either help you do it, or they can be the person that covers that for the team. And it's looking at the big picture of what the team can offer and how you can help each other. I mean, I ran a support team, technical support team, for a long time, and we were a cost. We had minimal budget all the time, and all of our training had to be done in ways that were very imaginative, because we had to find ways to help each other learn.
So what imaginative ways did you use?
Well, just using each other to be able to come up with small groups that would go off and train each other to do things, rather than saying, well, we're all going to go off on some fancy course. It's like, we've got two people here that know how to do this really well, so let's help them be able to help the rest of us. Now, they may not be trained as trainers, so I wasn't expecting them to deliver a class, but it was about, well, let's take, you know, you see what support you need to be able to deliver something in some format that the rest would appreciate and take on board. And again, some of it's not even about how, it's about the time you do it. So it might be little snippets versus a whole day and that sort of thing. So
So do you keep in touch with the business for many years, or you just help them set up and then
If they want me to, I do. So obviously I like to keep in contact with the people I've worked with. Usually once I've worked with someone quite closely for 6 months, you develop quite a good relationship anyway. So typically we do keep in touch, because that's just human nature much as anything. And it also means that if you are still in touch, if things change in their business and they need to kind of come back and tweak things a bit, then they remember you're there to have that conversation.
So is it the manager you tend to deal with most of the time?
Yes. Yeah, so managers, business owners, that side.
And do you ever have to advise a manager that maybe they should get rid of one member of staff and employ someone else, or does that not part
of
your job?
Yeah, so normally the way we would work is we would make sure they've got all the performance management processes in place they need and that they're actually using them, because even if they decided they thought they wanted to get rid of somebody, if they haven't done all those steps, then, you know, through the legal HR routes, they're still going to have to go through that anyway. So the approach I take is, let's not even think about that right now. Let's make sure we've got everything in place so that you can say that you're doing everything you can to set the right expectations, support people to do their work well. And if at the end of all of that, if you're working well as a manager and you've got all the process in place and they're still not responding, then that's where I might suggest you have a chat with somebody from HR and see what the next steps might be.
So you must have noticed over the years some amazing businesses. When you perhaps sort of look online, you think, gosh, I helped them set up that and everything.
Yeah, it's, this business has only been going for 3 years, so I've obviously not got hundreds and hundreds of clients to look back on, but it's really nice when you talk to people and they tell you how well people are doing. And often I start working with people after they've lost a lot of staff. And so when you come back sort of several years later and they've still got the staff they had when I started working with them, you think, okay, so what we've put in place is working, because clearly these people haven't left. So we've done something right, and that's fantastic.
Oh, that's really great. Well, thank you very much for coming in, Nikki, and telling us all about that.
No problem.
Would you like to give us your website details so we can get more information?
www.mulberrybushconsulting, which is all one word, .co.uk.
That's great. Thank you very much, Nikki. That was Nikki Faulkner from Mulberry Bush Consulting.
You're listening to Just Women on Brooklands Radio. You can join in by emailing any comments or questions you may have to justwomen@brooklandsradio.co.uk, or check us out on Facebook. Search for Just Women at Brooklands Radio. Just Women is just what you need.